Hey, what's up now?
Brother, what's up?
This is a big party, man.
Yeah, brother, like, stop. Right on.
As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. How you doing this morning, Connor?
I'm doing all right, Earl.
All right. Well, the weather's, we're locked in now. So
locked and loaded. Locked and loaded.
So if by now you don't know that voice, it is my cohort and co-host, Sandy Williams. It's Monday. That means Sandy Williams. Hey, Sandy, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. It is definitely, I looked at the weather forecast. This is what we got. We're here.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's
late fall, early winter is on the horizon.
Well, yeah, it's the middle. It's the middle of November, right? I mean, we've been dodging bullets for a long time, and so it's that time, man. If your mind's not set yet, you need to be living in a different climate. This is it. This is what we got. And we're here.
Yeah, we're more than halfway through the NFL season. That's a long season.
Yeah, so we've got a great guest who's going to be joining us, Sandy, in a moment. His name is Nan Su. And he is an investigative reporter from the Epoch Times. And it's a perfect timing, Sandy, because right now President Joe Biden is in China. And with Xi Jinping, is that how it's pronounced?
Yes.
And they're discussing what many of us know has been an ongoing negative conversation between nations. And it's good that Joe Biden is there, right? I mean, this long distance sniping at one another makes no sense since we've been such great trading partners.
Well, I do like Biden's approach in terms of speaking openly and sort of in a very hospitable fashion towards Xi. I think this compulsion we have to treat China as if they are the enemy in all respects is only going to lead us in the wrong direction. You know, in the last 4 years, we've moved in a totally the wrong direction with respect to China and our relations with them. So hopefully this can get us back on the right foot.
All right. So our guest is here. I want to welcome this morning Mr. Nan Su. He is an investigative reporter with the Epoch Times. He's in Los Angeles. Good morning to you, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Earl. Thank you for having me today.
Yes. And we are joined by my co-host, Mr. Sandy Williams, who's been to China and I think is as well equipped to have the conversation as anybody. So I want to introduce you to Sandy Williams.
Good to meet you. You're up early.
Thank you, Sandy. Nice meeting you through the air.
So let's talk about what's going on? Why has China all of a sudden become an enemy to the United States? Can you explain why?
Well, I think China, you know, there's something seriously wrong in the chemistry in the relation between China and the United States. We have always thinking that China, it's a peaceful competitor to compete with China, maybe good for the future economy and development in the United States. But however, China, you know, the Chinese communist regime has always in their mind think the United States is the number one enemy. They are, you know, they think freedom and democracy is the biggest threat to its existence, to the political systems in China. So it's good that we, United States start waking up in the last few years. It was a good direction. And President Trump, back in 2016, when he was elected, he started trying to turn the wrong direction of China policy of United States close to half century, and set, pretty much set by, you know, started by almost 50 years ago when Henry Kissinger visited Beijing.
Sandy?
Yeah, well, you know, my sense is that we tend to poke a sharp stick towards China when we talk about it domestically in our politics. I mean, you described an America that's benign about China, but that hasn't been my sense of the American approach to China since Trump, for sure, and Trump's trade policies, and the notion of trying to villainize and vilify Chinese conduct with respect to technology, for instance. I mean, there's no question that there's been corporate espionage carried out by Chinese corporations, but of course, corporate espionage goes on all the time between all kinds of companies, American, internationally. And we seem to be hell-bent on focusing on China as being a sort of villainous. And I fear that it's only because people here can look in a crystal ball and see that the trajectory of their economy looks very much like they could become the dominant economy by the middle of this century. And so that economic fear seems to be prodding us in the direction of creating something that will be something different than economic hostility, particularly as we wave a red flag towards them on Taiwan.
Well, think about Taiwan, okay? It's not only the economic concern. It's really the security concern of Taiwan. You know, more than 2 months ago, China, Beijing's leader, already claimed the sovereignty of Taiwan. And by their means, that if U.S. naval ship want to go through Taiwan Strait, they need a permission from Beijing. Now, think about it. Most of people don't understand why China really going after Taiwan. They think that China going after Taiwan is just because they want the most advanced semiconductor industry in Taiwan, but which is true, but it's just a very small part of China's purpose. China, we are, by what you're talking about economically, I think, this is actually most people concerned about. But, I would say most of people here in the United States, we are way, way, and way behind the curve. You know, we are still thinking of Hong Kong freedom. China already think about Taiwan. And now we are thinking Taiwan, but China is already on their next target, which is Japan. If China controls Taiwan with the few man-made islands in the South China Sea, China will have the entire control of the South China Sea. And Japan is our biggest ally in the Indo-Pacific region, and Japan has a fatal weakness. Japan, it's an island nation, one-third of the economy, depending on trade, and South China Sea, it's the region that one-third of total global trade, will go through. So basically, if China controls South China Sea, they control Japan's economic lifeline. And that's number one. And number two, China is quickly expanding its economy in a very coercive way, the most important region for China right now, the number one trading partner of China is not EU, it's not United States, it's actually the Association of the Southeast Asian Countries. That 11 countries in the Southeast Asia, that's the number one trading partner of China. right now. It's been that way for a couple of years. So if China controls South China Sea, they think they will have upper hand to influence these countries. So that's why, you know, China right now, their economy, and not just the economy and their military, Chinese Navy already have more naval ships than United States Navy. And if they control the Taiwan, South China Sea, they will hold upper hand to really threaten Japan, as well as, you know, have major influence power to Southeast Asian countries. And this is the biggest concern, not just the economy, but the way that China quickly expand its economy. It really posed a threat to the security and peace and stability of the Indo-Pacific region, which is a region that extended from nations around Indian Ocean all the way to the coastline of the western states of United States. This is a region.
So yes. So is it as much a threat to those nations, or is it that we're concerned because it's a threat to the United States of America? So who are we responding to the threat of? Those nations or our nations?
This is why I was going to talk about the Indo-Pacific region. If you talk about, if you think about this, Indo-Pacific region, that's a region encompasses half of the world's population and two-thirds of the world's economy. And the United States Indo-Pacific region, Indo-Pacific strategy, call this region the world's center of gravity. And China, it's the biggest threat to the peace and stability of this entire region.
Sandy, I know we got to go to a break. Hang on. Sandy, we'll get to you on the other side. Hold the thought, Sandy. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. Our guest is Nan Su. He is an investigative reporter for the Epoch Times. He's in California. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. And on the line, Mr. Nan Su. He is an investigative reporter from the Epoch Times. Sandy, you had a question you wanted to ask our guests before we went to break.
Well, I did, man. You know, you're making some equivalencies here. You're saying that China has a powerful economy, and therefore, somehow, that means that they'll convert it to military strength in Southeast Asia and be a problem. You're suggesting that the fact that the countries in Southeast Asia are their biggest trading partners are a problem. But let's look at America. We've got the most powerful economy in the world, but that doesn't make us ipso facto a military threat to countries surrounding us. Our biggest trading partners are the countries surrounding us. That's normal. I mean, you say that China's biggest trading partners are in Southeast Asia. Well, you would expect that. I mean, those countries are directly, territorially close by, making trade most economic with respect to the transportation of goods and services. And so I guess I'm troubled by the way you're coming at this, because you're making some equivalencies that don't necessarily aren't necessarily supported by fact, unless we know something about China's intent that we should that would convert their economic might into a concern about what they're going to do militarily. I mean, suggesting that they could go after Japan is a very surprising kind of a thing to say.
Well, there's still a point I want to make. Thank you for bringing those points up. Number one, this so-called Indo-Pacific strategy was not designed by the United States. It was started back in 2007, way earlier before the United States even adopted this strategy. It was started by the strategic thinker, the former Prime Minister of Japan, Abe. So, you know, he thought this day is coming, I mean, more than a decade, you know, more than, it's almost like 15 years ago. That's number one. And number two, think about why the United States going to start, you know, investing in China, trying to open China. Looking back, you know, I'm not sure if you realize, from 2001, China joined WTO. In the last 20 years, from 2001 to 2021, China's economy grew tenfold. I mean, literally tenfold. Now, think about why, you know, we trying to invest in China, try to open China. Go back to look for, President Clinton's speech at Johns Hopkins University back in 2000, try to give China the most of, favored trade station status, because that's the prerequisite for China to join WTO. Basically, because we think if once China has economic freedom and China's middle class will grow, China become richer, there will be a political reform. And that has already been proved a total wishful thinking. And in just 2 weeks ago, China, the Chairman Xi, already into his third term, and it seems like he's going to be there forever. He's on his way to become next Chairman Mao. So the Chinese communist regime has been, you know, coercively expanding, and they are trying, South China Sea, but also South Pacific Islanders, you know, they try to build their military base over there. This is a very important, and China is behind Russia for its invasion. You know, 20 days before Russia invaded Ukraine, on February 4th of this year, Putin went to Beijing and signed 17 economic agreements with Russia and with China. And China is the only country, probably right now, the only major countries. You know, I'm not saying only countries, but it's the major countries buying all the gas and oil from Russia.
I think India is also. So I think India is quite a major country. So I think that it's not quite clear, and I think China's rate of purchase actually has been far lower than Russia would hope they would do. I mean, my sense of the reporting out of China with respect to the level of purchases of gas and oil is that they have been much more moderate than they might be, and that Russia is quite unhappy with the fact that that China is taking this moderate approach to support there, and China's done other things to moderate the extent to which they could be viewed as backing Russia in the Ukraine invasion. I mean, they haven't joined, like India, Mexico, and a number of other countries, they haven't joined in the sanctioning. But, I'm not thinking that the facts necessarily support painting it with such a black and white brush with respect to China's purposes. We went to China for a lot of internal U.S. corporate purposes. And I think that Clinton was responding to the pressure he was getting from U.S. corporations to open up the Chinese market because of the cheap labor available and the potential growth in a consumer market there that might follow.
Well, first of all, it's all wishful thinking China will have political reform eventually and become a part of a democratic nation. That was the, it was the major idea behind, trying to open Chinese market. But it, well, first of all,
Nan, I'm sorry, I need you to hang on. We got to go to break quickly. Can you hang on?
Yeah, of course.
All right, got to go to a break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation. You're tuning into the Earl Ingram Show. Sandy Williams, we'll be right back.
Up and down my back, my spine, in my brain, it injures me.
And, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show, as always. You can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with my co-host Sandy Williams on the line, Mr. Nansu, who is an investigative reporter for the Epoch Times. Mr. Su, I think you were responding to something Sandy had to say before we had to go to break.
I think that, first of all, we have to realize the idea of putting investments give the consumer markets and as well as giving our technology to China, in the last 20 years, the idea that make China eventually become a part of a democratic world. That idea has failed brutally. It totally failed. And China is in the 20th Congress just 2 weeks ago. Xi Jinping is continuing in his third term. And within two weeks after the 20th CCP Congress, China has not make a major announcement. They are going to open more than 50,000 stores under this so-called Federation of Supply and Marketing Cooperative, which was a dominant retail and wholesale organization, pretty much dominated more than 95% of the market under the time, during the time under Chairman Mao. So China is clearly making its way to going back to a central plan economy. So the idea to make China open up by investment has brutally failed, and China right now is forming a major airline relation with Russia and Iran. So there is a group of countries in central, around these three countries right now, quickly forming another different group opposing the Western democratic world on the Eurasian continent.
So let me ask you. So your position is, if China does not have the freedom to join and create partnerships with whomever they choose, there's something that's morally wrong or ethically wrong, that China doesn't have the freedoms to pick in relationships with whomever they choose? Is that what you're saying?
No, they have their freedom, but we have to, it's a two different ideology that's driven, the Western world is forming the entire West. We have, the point here is we need to, concern about the safety of our future generation's lifestyle. We need to think about,
we mean in American.
That is correct.
Okay, go ahead.
I am a American.
Sandy, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Sandy, we can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. both Russia and Iran have been partitioned off from the rest of the world by the United States and its policies with respect to sanctions, so that they're left without anyone to trade with, and China is seizing that opportunity. And I'm not sure that suggests that they're villainous or that their intent is to undermine the American democracy. And I'm not sure that Chinese economic supremacy, if they were to achieve it, would jeopardize the American standard of living or quality of life. I mean, I think you're treating the world as if it's a zero-sum game, and the world economy as if it's a zero-sum game, and that isn't the way the world economy works. The bigger the world economy gets, the more opportunity there is for nations to be highly prosperous, whether they're dominant or not. The United States GDP, the GDP per capita in the United States is 12th or 13th in the world. I mean, we aren't the most prosperous country in the world per capita. Places like Norway, in fact, exceed us. So I have trouble with this equivalency of seeing a danger in China economic development that endangers the American quality of life. And furthermore, if China is really headed towards a central planning economy, can't we safely bet that means that will slow down their rate of economic growth, and that they will not achieve the economic supremacy that's being forecast based on the way they have reorganized their economy to operate more or less like a private equity fund?
Well, Sandy, I think from the entire conversation you have made today, that you emphasize again and again about economy, you totally, have no concern about China's economy. It's built based on a regime that's entirely against the freedom and democracy. That's a political system, and that's a political system. Always think the United States is the number one enemy, number one threat to their political system. So you have no concern about that. So that's why really driving the difference between your view and my view. And I'm from China. I know how Chinese people are taken away their freedom from. Just look at the zero case COVID that's in China. People got locked down still. From city to city, from province to province. So the concern here, that your concern is really about economy. It's all about economy. And my concern is from a different standpoint. My concern is really about the safety of our future generation's lifestyle, about our future generation's freedom and democracy, how they live this world. I concern about not to make our future generation. I'm from China. My children will grow up here. They were born here. I don't want them to go through what I have to go through when I was in China. I don't want them to become, in the future, the slave of Chinese Communist Party.
And your concern is that the Chinese Communist Party will spread its tentacles into the United States, and that it will affect the U.S. Quality of life. Don't you think that there are more concerns about what might affect the U.S. quality of life involved with political movements currently involved in politics in the United States?
Well, both left and right, here in the United States, in the future, it's all going to be the enemy of China. That's what they're concerned. They are concerned that the entire United States is a threat because we are the leading power of the democratic world. So it really has nothing to do, the fight between the leftists and the rightists in the United States. You can see, the China policy eventually is the only thing that the Democratic Democrats and Republicans, they are in line with each other right now in the Congress. So there, it really has nothing to do with the left and right fight in the United States, because it's really concerning. What should really concern us is the safety of our future generation, how they are going to continue to live.
And is your suggestion then that, for instance, with respect to Taiwan, that the U.S. should consider boots on the ground and actually going to war with U.S. Personnel and direct military might against China? Would that be necessary in the circumstance of the Chinese deciding to exercise the sovereignty which we agreed they had over Taiwan in 1979?
Well, first of all, that's totally wrong, okay? United States has never agreed that Taiwan is a part of China. I think you got it totally wrong. You are talking about China's one China principle. But I am talking about United States one China policy. You know, one China policy and one China principle are totally two different kind of things. You know, Beijing's leaders always talk about one China principle, which means Taiwan is a part of China. But U.S., you go back to read, there were three communiques signed between United States and China, 1971, 1979, and 1982. You know, in those three communiques was clearly the United States said, you know, we acknowledge, meaning U.S. government acknowledge, that's the original word, keyword, acknowledge, but what Chinese believe Taiwan is a part of China. We never say we agree, but we say we acknowledge. Now, what happened is between 1947 and 1991, Chinese government in Beijing and Taiwan's government in Taiwan, they fight. You know, they both think the other part belongs to them. So, and the United States government's position was, we acknowledge both of your positions. But because of the Cold War, we, you know, China is important to us. So therefore, we choose to acknowledge, but we don't agree neither of you. But however, we choose to build a formal diplomatic relation with China and not to build a formal diplomatic relation with Taiwan. That's what it was. That's what the United States government's one China policy means. It means we don't have formal diplomatic relationship with Taiwan. That's it. But we never agree Taiwan is a part of China, and because Taiwan is very important to the security and peace and stability of this entire region. So from very beginning, it's been very clear.
So your answer then is that you would suggest that the government, that the United States ought to commit troops and its own military directly into the defense of Taiwan?
Well, President Biden repeatedly stating if China invade Taiwan, we will intervene militarily, let me go back again. Go back to the three communiques signed between United States and China. Now, in that communique, when United States signed the three communiques with China, United States make a promise. The U.S. government is not going to build a formal diplomatic relation with Taiwan. But that promise was not, you know, unilateral. Promise. It's got a condition, and that condition is the Chinese government in Beijing cannot use military force to solve its issue over the Taiwan Strait. It cannot use military force to take over Taiwan. That was the condition. So. And also, at the same time, the United States government has a Taiwan Relations Act, you know, which it's to keep the safety and security of Taiwan. So based on the promise we made to both China and Taiwan, President Biden is correct. If China invades Taiwan, we need to intervene immediately by our military.
So Nan, hang on one more second. We got one more short break. Can you hang on?
Yeah, of course.
All right. Got to go to a break. It's Monday, and that's Mondays with Sandy Williams. Our phone lines are open, as always, at 844-967-2789 on the line, Mr. Nansu. And at the time that we're having this conversation, Xi Jinping and President Joe Biden are in discussions right now. Got to go to a break. We'll be right back. Back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Mondays. That's Mondays with my co-host Sandy Williams, and on the line, Mr. Nansu, who, again, is an investigative reporter for the Epoch Times. He's out of California. So what are your thoughts, sir, right now as President Biden and Xi Jinping, are in conversations and dialogue. What are you expecting to come of that conversation? Either a coming together, more of an understanding between the two nations, or that they'll drift further apart?
Earl, are you asking me or Sandy that question?
I'm asking you.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah. I just don't want to take the opportunity of...
No, sir. No, go ahead.
Okay, good. Yeah, I think the communication is necessary. It's just like the Cold War time. During the Cold War time, you know, we still have a relation with Soviet Union. The the communication is to avoid a lot of misjudgment. However, the entire direction of China policy, it's set to go to the right direction ever since 2016 when Trump was elected. You know, remember, let's go back to 2016 when Trump was elected as the president-elect, not even sworn into the White House yet. He did something very controversial. Pretty much the whole nation, both left and right, criticized him. But on December 3rd, 2016, less than a month right after the election, he did something really controversial. At that time, he picked up the phone and called Taiwan's president. And after that, he issued a press statement and stating that, call Taiwan's president, basically. Now, looking back right now, I don't think, I think most people will not call that was a mistake. See, he saw way ahead, about how this relation, the direction of this relation goes. So, and I'm talking about not only about now, it's about the future, it's really about the security of United States. It's about the lifestyle of our future generations. This has nothing to do with the fight between the left and the right. And not President Trump, but not only President Biden. I mean, in the next few decades, all the presidents coming to the White House, regardless if he's a Democratic, or he's a Republican, the proper measurement of their presidency, it's all going to be about their China policy, because China is quickly growing really become a threat to the future generation. So our future generation is on the stake. Their lifestyle is on the stake. So we are moving towards to that direction, you know, with fully awareness. And that's what this communication in Biden and Chairman Xi is about.
Sandy?
Well, no, I guess my question is, what position should Biden be taking? I mean, so they're meeting. What do you think it is that should transpire during the meeting?
Well, we need to show our very strong stand. The United States, it's decided, you know, it's determined to protect Taiwan's security. I mean, Taiwan is totally different than Ukraine. United States and the entire Western world, none of the Western world countries have any security agreement with Ukraine. But we do have a Taiwan Relations Act with Taiwan. And we do have that promise signed in the three communiques between United States and China. Once China invade Taiwan militarily, that supposedly means the end of a U.S.-China relationship, because they break their promise made during that three communique as the founding stones of U.S.-China relationship. So Taiwan's situation is totally different. And also, you know, I already talk about why Taiwan is so important
The situation in Taiwan is not in a total vacuum in terms of American conduct. We've been selling them arms at an accelerating rate. We've taken now to having not direct diplomatic relationships with them, but we've taken to having situations arise like the presidential phone call, like the Nancy Pelosi visit, things that would appear to be very close to diplomatic recognition. You know, the communiques you talk about were very purposefully drawn in the ambiguous way they were drawn. In fact, it was called strategic ambiguity because of the fact that the United States was implicitly recognizing that it would not recognize Taiwan as an independent country because it was, in fact, historically a part of China, and the Taiwanese talked about themselves as being separatists right up until 2019. So that there's been a recognition for a long period of time that the government in Taiwan, in fact, asserted its right of sovereignty over all of China up until the end of the 20th century.
Now, think about the so-called strategic ambiguity. The strategic, we will not have the strategic ambiguity once China invades Taiwan, right? See, this is the talk, you know, this is the talk we're leading to. And in the 20th Congress of CCP, that was like about 2 weeks ago, Xi Jinping, in his opening ceremony, he clearly laying out a timeline that they want to unify Taiwan between 2049. And a lot of our military experts thinking, you know, 2027 may be the time they will invade Taiwan.
Hey,
protect Taiwan. No, I'm not asking. We recognize. I never say that we want to recognize Taiwan as an independent country.
Yeah. So, Nan.
Yes.
Nan, I want to thank you very much, man. I really appreciate it. We got to go. We'll reach out again at another time. Really appreciate it. Thank you for taking the time out. We've got to go to a break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. Be right back.
The irresistible appeal